concerning the administration of the departments.
And your role was in relation to them? Were you the intermediary between the heads of departments and the speaker?
Or? Yes, I was. Yes, as required.
Mm.
It wasn't a terribly onerous task, but it's it needed to be in matters which needed to be dealt with. Well, without delay and with judgment.
So were there any specific events during that period of time that or matters that you dealt with that stand out for you?
Not really. They were both obviously concerned with the new building, through the new and permanent Parliament House Committee. The new building was about half finished in those days, and they were concerned to see that the construction they went ahead as scheduled, and I wasn't here at the time, but they would be concerned to know that at the opening, when the building was ready for occupation, that all the things that needed to be done for that to happen were started to be put in place. There were a number of other matters which, on a personal basis, I dealt with on behalf of the Speaker. He had a very close interest in, through his life, he was a Lion, and through the Lions organisation, he was concerned with the control and maintenance of drugs and various sorts, and I dealt with those matters which needed to be handled within his office if he needed help. I had several visits with him to functions associated with that, to Launceston, I recall, to Sydney, and to Melbourne, I think, at one stage, yes.
You accompanied him on these visits?
Yes, I did.
Was that because of his illness?
No. That was because he needed secretarial support to maintain his involvement and his interest.
Mm.
Yes. Oh, no. Not because of his illness, no. I also... He travelled overseas at several times while I was there, through his involvement with the Interparliamentary Union, and when that happened, his office in Melbourne would have been vacant. I would go down to Melbourne and I'd sit in the office while he was away, just to deal with matters that arose which needed his attention, and to ensure that the matters which the office normally dealt with were dealt with at the appropriate way.
Was this the electorate office or the office as speaker?
He had a speaker in the Commonwealth offices in Treasury Place.
Hmm. So you had no involvement in his electorate matters?
Oh, only marginally. Most of those matters were dealt with by Kerry Clancy, his principal private secretary.
Yes. So the more political side of running the office was handled by him rather than by you. Did not have a direct involvement in those.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. But we, I never sat in the same office as Kerry in Melbourne. But here in Canberra, we were both occupied the same office space, dealing with matters which needed the Speaker's attention at that time.
Where exactly were you housed in this building?
It was in the building on the main floor, almost towards the back of the building, very close to the members' dining room. Yes.
Did you have any staff working for you? Or?
Well, he had... three staff. He had a permanent attendant who looked after all his wants here in the house, but he had two office staff, a girl who ran the office plus a stenographer. and they occupied the space immediately adjacent to the Speaker's office, which you know.
Mm.
Yeah. I did one overseas trip with him through the four meetings of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. It was in Kiribati in 1985, towards July, August. Was a meeting there of the Pacific arms of the CPA. There were people there from each of the Australian states, also from Papua New Guinea, from Nauru, and I suspect New Zealand, Fiji, yes.
What was your role at that time?
Well, I was there to provide him with secretarial assistance as required. Not a great deal of preparation was involved, but I suppose in his particular case it was a matter of as much of making his presence felt. Not that he had to do that particularly, but he had to ensure that, you know, Australia was represented and he was there to represent them.
Did you sit in on meetings?
Oh, just a general meeting, yes. Yeah. You know, it was about a week. We were away for about a week, I suppose. It had to fly through for Fiji and Tuvalu to get there, but yes, yeah. And Mrs. Jenkins was there as well, supporting him. Yeah.
Any interesting things happened on that tour?
No, not really. It was a very, for me, it was a very pleasant time. But with the Speaker, as I've mentioned before, he had this motor neuron disability, and the flight, particularly from Nandi to Tuvalu and Tuvalu to Kiribati, was in a 748 aircraft, the Speaker had a little bit of difficulty getting up steps, and it was my job to stand behind him and give him a little bit of a push up if he needed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can't imagine that sort of thing in your duty statement, but
other duties as required.
Yes, other duties as required. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'd like now to move on to a slightly different, slightly different tack before we will come back to and continue the story in more chronological order, if I may. Were you interested in politics before you came here, or did you become interested by working in this building?
Well, I think the latter was the case. I guess I was interested in politics, particularly. My interest in politics would have been generated initially from my experience in the Department of Territories, and particularly through the work of the United Nations and Trusteeship Council, and the involvement of the minister who was Paul Hasluck at the time.
Mm.
Paul Hasluck visited Nauru while I was there, and it was really it was a very interesting time. He was interested certainly in the politics of it, but he was also interested in the administration of the place, and I guess my interest in politics originated from that time.
Mm.
When he was there in 1953 early, he also had with him John Howes, who was the ministerial secretariat, deputy minister, if you like, and he was there for pretty much the same sorts of reasons, but much lower level than Paul Hasluck, as you can imagine.
What was your impression of Paul Hasluck?
I was very impressed by Paul Hasluck.
Mm.
He was a very good minister. He certainly had his own ideas and didn't always coincide with those put to him by the Department of Territories when I was there. But he was a very, I think, my experience of him, which was very limited, of course, was of a very genuine, hard-working, knowledgeable minister.
Hmm.
Yes.
You actually had the fortune or misfortune of experiencing Parliament under as many as 7 prime ministers, from Menzies through to Hawke. Now, did you have any personal dealings with any of them?
Well, yes and no. In 1965, I think it was, while we were deeply involved in the Tullamarine and Mascot work for the Department of Civil Aviation, and my office was in L11 on the lower floor here, I was working away one night at the at one of the reports, and there was a knock on the door. I said, "Come in." And who should walk in but Sir Robert Menzies? And I said, "Good evening, Prime Minister. Can I help you?" He said, "Oh, I'm in the wrong office." He said, "I was looking for Doug Anthony." Now, the Country Party rooms at that stage were on the floor above and back towards King's Hall. And I said, "Oh, well, you're in the wrong floor, Prime Minister. Let me show you how to get to Doug Anthony's office." I took him out to the corridor and showed him, if you go up these steps and then turn right, and at the end of the corridor, before you get to King's Hall, on the left-hand side, that's the Country Party room, and that's where you'll find Doug Anthony, I think. I doubt very much whether Bob Menzies had been down to the lower floor of Parliament House ever before, but yes, that was my experience of him. Yeah.
As a parliamentary operator, did you get an impression of him at all?
He said, "Oh, look, I'm sorry to worry you." No, he was a very gentle man. He was a very courteous man, let me put it that way. Oh, no, he recognised he was in the wrong place.
Mm. Did you ever sit in the House or listening to him during the time that he was still Prime Minister?
Well, I was here only for 2 years while he was Prime Minister. I didn't really get too much time to be sitting in the House listening. I was always impressed by Bob Menzies. I regard him as one of the best Prime Ministers we've ever had.
Mm.
As an operator, he was well known for the very pleasant relationships that he apparently had with Arthur Call. Not very many people outside Parliament would know that. Yeah, but I think it's more than just hearsay. So.
That was a clear impression that you had of him.
Oh, yes, mm. Yes. Yeah.
Mm. What about Harold Holt?
Well, I had nothing to do with Harold Holt. I mean, he didn't have any cause to have any dealings with him. I remember, however, at the time that he was lost, there was mayhem in the Country Party rooms at that time because of the role of John McEwen. It was a very busy place in that area of Parliament.
Were you actually in the building when this was going on?
Oh, some of it, yes. Mm. But it went over several days. I mean, it just wasn't something that happened overnight. But I remember the comings and goings at the time and the confusion that it caused.
Mm.
Yeah.
What about John Gorton?
Well, he was Prime Minister for a fairly short time. I didn't know John Gorton. I had nothing to do with him.
Mm.
Or very much to do with his successor. Billy McMahon.
Mm.
My connections in those days, during the Public Works Committee days, were really confined to my connections were confined to the members themselves.
Mm.
But occasionally I had a visit to see the Minister for Works, Reggie Wright, at one stage, to dealing with matters affecting the committee and the need for change in legislation to reduce the number of projects that were coming to the committee for scrutiny.
Mm.
Yes.
What about Gough Whitlam?
Well, I remember the 11th of November 1975, but no, I'd had nothing to do with Gough Whitlam, just apart from observing him in action.
And what observations did you make of that?
Well, I think he was endeavouring to achieve an enormous amount of work, progress, in a very short time. He'd been sitting on the opposition benches for however long it was, probably 10 years, and I think all these things must have built up in his mind as needing attention, and when he got there he was flat out to achieve as many of them as he could. And it was quite evident from my experience in Prime Minister's department, by the way that he formulated his cabinet and changed them around to suit their capacity, their abilities, that he was wanting to make enormous progress in a short time, and it wasn't always achievable, and in some ways I don't think he was terribly well supported by some of his lieutenants.
Mm. You mentioned specifically the 11th of November. You were in the building on that day.
Yes, I certainly was.
Walk us through your experience of the day.
Well, the report that we're talking about earlier had been cleared by the committee, and we'd had it printed in roneoed form, ready for tabling. And I went to the committee office that morning and said, can we put this matter on the notice paper for consideration today? And, yes, that's fine. But I subsequently found out that the notice paper hadn't start again. I found out that the item on the notice paper wasn't likely to come up because the House had adjourned. And asked why the House has adjourned. Well, the Prime Minister's gone out to Government House. And Tony Lamb, as I said earlier, was chairman of the committee, and he had a tabling speech ready to go when it was tabled. And I needed to tell him what was happening. And of course, nothing was happening. The House was adjourned.
You didn't hear any rumours or anything at all?
No. I was probably in King's Hall when Sir David Smith was delivering the message from the Governor General out on the front steps. I don't know whether I was or not, but it was like that.
Mm.
Yes, it was a very busy day, but no one was getting anywhere, and lots of people were just confused about what was happening and how it was happening. Except that the House then sat at, I think, 2 o'clock in the afternoon to get through the business of the change of government and an election.
Then Malcolm Fraser came in.
I have one memory about Malcolm Fraser. It would have been 1970-odd, during the latter days of the Liberal government, when he was out of office, and Bert Kelly was the chairman of the Public Works Committee, and I was in Bert Kelly's office talking to him about a matter, and the door opened and in came Malcolm Fraser. There wasn't a knock on the door, no, he just came in, and he stood just inside the door. He didn't say anything, just stood there. I was sitting down, so was Bert Kelly. It was quite obvious that I was intruding on on his day. So I said, I'll see you later, Bert, and I left.
Well, that the sum total of your dealings with him?
Yes, that was enough.
But what was your impression of him as a parliamentarian?
Oh, I think he did pretty well. It's during the early days of his prime ministership after 1975, I don't know what sort of a ministry was before then, he was overtaken by Bob Hawke's government later on. Yes. Yeah.
And what about Bob Hawke?
Oh, my first impressions of Bob Hawke were when I was a senior parliamentary officer. One of my jobs was when the new members were all got together and they had briefings of them, I delivered a paper on the work of the committee secretariats, and Bob Hawke was in the audience. That was the first time he came as a member. Yeah, he'd obviously been here numerous times before, but yes, I didn't really have any dealings with him. Except after I retired, he used to get a fairly frequent game of golf in at the golf club and at the Royal Canberra, and he'd arrive there about the same time as I would for an early morning game before he attended to his parliamentary duties and with his security staff and so on. And if I happened to be on the course playing and with some of my partners, and he was coming up behind us, so it was a matter of standing aside and letting him go through.
Yeah. So you never played him?
I've never played him. No, but that was after I'd retired.
What about leaders of the opposition or members of the opposition? Any that you specifically remember?
No, I don't. Not leaders of the opposition. I had a lot to do with members of the opposition with various committees, but none really in a leadership capacity, except I think in other circumstances Harry Jenkins might have well been a minister. I think when the Hawke government was elected and he was selecting his ministry, so that the tale goes, he was on the short list, but the numbers of left and right and state by state rather precluded him from a ministry, and so speakership was the only way that he could be rewarded for the part he'd played, because he had been a member since 1973. And prior to that, he'd been a member of Parliament in Victoria for some 10 years, I believe. Mm. Yes.
So, your dealings were clearly with the members of committees, and also you had some dealings, direct dealings, with the ministers themselves, as while you were working there.
Occasionally, as I said, I had interview with Reggie Wright at one stage when we were dealing with amendments to the Public Works Committee Act. I had dealings with John Button at one stage during the Whitlam times, when he was Minister for Industry or whatever it was. But I was a JP, and he wanted some signatures witnessed, and I got the call. He said, John Button needs your services. So I went along and provided my services as a JP. And yes, he's a delightful fellow. Mm. Funny man, yes. Yeah.
Funny in which way? Did you have any funny, episodes, anything?
Oh, no, that was my only experience of John Button. Mm. But he said, I know when I knocked on his door and went in, or was introduced, I said, oh, very grateful, I'm glad we could find a JP in this building. But and we sat down and talked about who we were and what we were, and what I was doing here.
Mm.
Yep.
Did you have much contact with parliamentarians beyond those who were members of the committees that you served?
Beyond?
The committee, those who were served on the committees that you actually worked with.
Ah, yes, I had. I knew Ken Fry, for example, very well. We had a mutual Masonic interest. I also had quite a bit to do with John Langmore later, after I'd retired. Those are two examples. I can't think of any other off the cuff, but.
Were you contacts with particularly with, you mentioned Ken Fry, you got to know him while you were still working here.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What sort of were you dealing with? Were they social or?
No, they were entirely social.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah. He was a member for Canberra, or one of the members in the Canberra electorate.
Mm.
We had a number of, as I say, social interests, and I used to see him occasionally. And yes.
That, going back to your interest in politics, did you ever join a political party?
No. I was tempted to join the Liberal Party at one stage, but not as an active member, just as a supporting member, but it never eventuated.
Over the years, you must have witnessed some major events happening here in Old Parliament House. Can you remember any such events?
Well, I've mentioned two of them already. The November 75 event is just forever engraved in my mind, and also the events surrounding the Holt disappearance, that sort of thing.
Any other ones?
Yeah, those are two of the events that really do remember.
There were some very large demonstrations out in front of Parliament House during these years, from time to time. Any of those can you remember? Your office was not, I don't believe you were in L11 at that point in time, but you may have been over in the Hyatt or in the Hotel Canberra.
Well, except the time that the LBJ came in 1966 or 7, I had a ringside view of LBJ's cortege. I just went out on the veranda outside my office, and there he was, getting out of the car and going up to me, Harold Holt, on the top of the steps. That sort of thing. The Aboriginal Affairs demonstrations, which resulted in the movement of the KG5 memorial, they would have occurred in the early 1970s. That sort of thing. But in those days, there wasn't quite the security measures in place that there are now to deal with those, and so that the crowds that were around were not exactly precluded than as they are these days. Yes, I'll never forget LBJ getting out of his car.
And there was no security inside the building, no one coming keeping you away from?
Not from where I was, no. I think there might have been some of the other staff there who were watching, because the parliamentary draftsman's office was immediately next door, and further on there were country party rooms.
Mm.
Yeah.
Time for a little break?
It's time, yeah.
Good.
Thanks.
What are you doing for all the years you were here? You must have had close dealings with a significant number of staff in Old Parliament House. Any that particularly stand out for you?
Well, when I first arrived here, the as I said earlier, one of the interviewers when I got the job at the Public Works Committee was Ian Emerton, who had been a family friend particularly of my father's, from the early 1930s, I suppose. I saw quite a bit of him before he retired. Roy Bullock, who subsequently became clerk of the Senate, I knew very well from my hockey days. We lived very close to them in Barton at one stage. I also knew Doug Blake very well, partly through his naval experience, our naval common experience. He was clerk of the House. And I knew Alan Browning well, who late became clerk of the House. I knew him when he was a student at the Canberra High School. It goes back that far. I knew his family quite well. One of his brothers was about the same time at school as I was, and got to know him extremely well. He died during the war, but unfortunately. But those are probably the most prominent ones that come to mind. But there were a lot of people here I got to know well, working with them, of course. And bear in mind that in my days, and particularly the early days, the number of staff working here is only a fraction of the staff that is about these days. There were no members, didn't have office staff here, and they generally were self-supporting, although parties had resources which were available, but never on a personal, there were no personal staffs of ordinary members and senators. It's only the ministerial staffs that had staff here, their own staff.
What about Hansard staff? They travel with you from, you know, whenever you went out of town.
Yes, I had very many, many experiences with Hansard staff, who I found exceptionally good. I guess they wouldn't have remained here had they not been good at what they did. Bernie Harris was one that comes to mind because I've seen him in more recent times, but Bob Thompson is another one that comes to mind. There was another Harris whose Christian name I can't bring to mind, but we travelled many times with Hansard staff going into states, and particularly into the Northern Territory, where they travelled with us in planes and cars, and they were excellent. I've got to say it's a service that the Parliament ought to be very proud of.
Some of the committee inquiries you have that travelled far and wide, the Hansard staff came with you. What was working conditions like for them?
Well, pretty much the same as working conditions for me, but they were in the city areas. They were pretty good. We're travelling in the country, as I think I've said before, and I've shown you a photograph of the Hansard staff who had the same sorts of accommodation experiences as I did. I think generally the hands, particularly out of sitting times, the Hansard staff were delighted to get away and do what they had to do. When the House was sitting, and we didn't often have public hearings during those times, we certainly couldn't have a sitting here in Canberra while the House was actually sitting. We could have a Monday or a Friday public hearing if necessary, but they were excellent. They worked long hours. Wouldn't always be easy to what they were doing.
Did they when you travelled? Those staff and the committee members? Were you accommodated at the same hotels or same? in the same way?
Oh yes, generally.
Mm.
It's generally the same.
So you would share meals together, or and
oh yes,
socialise in that sense.
Mm. Yes, I remember the first trip I ever did to Darwin. We stayed at the Fanny Bay Hotel, and there was one member of the committee whose name I can't remember. He liked barramundi, and he had barramundi three meals a day. He liked to go to Darwin so he could eat barramundi. But in those days, barramundi was never heard of in retail fish shops down here. So, yeah.
Were all the committee members and staff, people who travelled with them, always equally sober and correct in their... Or did you have any experience of people who maybe had a bit more too much fun?
No, by and large, they were... Mm. All well behaved. If that's the term. one or two of them are not as friendly as others, but by and large they behave themselves. Mm. I mean, they were there to do a job, and they were the public face of their electorates, of course. So. That's the way it was.
Well, certainly the photos that you've shown me show a very sober looking lot, all wearing white shirts and ties.